Zeitgeist the Movie, 2007, directed and narrated by a guy named Peter Joseph. Why are we covering this one? Well, in my opinion, this one is sort of the Whitman sampler of conspiracies. It's got Christ myths. It talks about 9/11, talks about the Federal Reserve. It gets into false flag. It gets into a whole bunch of different things, but it kind of does this three-dish combo. Christ, 9/11, Federal Reserve. And it also got really popular in the very early days of YouTube, like when YouTube had only been around for a year or two. And in fact, I don't even think this movie in its entirety was on YouTube, because at that point, YouTube would just quick little clips of people going to the zoo and stuff. This one was on Google Video, which doesn't even exist anymore. So this is some OG internet conspiracy theory documentary, Zeitgeist. Where were you at when this came out?
I was in California at the time, and I actually got a copy of it from a gas station, a bootleg copy on a burned CD. That's how, to age us a little bit.
That's the best way to get a documentary about conspiracy theories, is at a gas station on like some burnt DVD-R by someone that you've never really met before.
Yeah, with like a paper copy of the of the cover, like, you know, Xeroxed and black and white. You're like, oh.
So were you going looking for a conspiracy documentary? Or they're just like, here you go, Zeitgeist, get it while it's hot.
Well, they actually started doing all kinds of bootlegs we'd buy there. You know what I mean? And the first one I got from there was Michael Moore's 9/11 movie. I forgot what it's called, but I got that there first. And then they were just always telling us, hey, we got a new documentary. We would always get all the other bootlegs, but we got really big into documentaries. And Zeitgeist was probably, like you said, it's the money masters of the 2000s.
I mean, and count yourself lucky, man, to see Zeitgeist, the movie, when it came out, is a very special moment in time, because we just rewatched it, and this is, damn, this is a while after, this is 12 years after it came out almost, over 10 years after it came out, and here we are watching all of this go over again, and it feels like it was still pretty relevant. So anyway, the one-sentence summary of this movie is that Zeitgeist the movie suggests that all organized religion, the global financial system, and all societal constructs are manipulative tools used to control the masses. I can get behind that, even though it's a pretty generic statement. You know, they're just controlling the masses, man. It presents a pretty good case.
Very good case. And throughout history, it doesn't just start from the 2000s. It pretty much goes to almost the beginning of time, or the beginning of written history.
All right, let's plot the course on this one. The movie itself is broken up into three distinct sections. And let's just go through the three sections. The first one is titled The Greatest Story Ever Told. And basically the premise is that the oldest religion that humans know came from tracking the sun and tracking the stars and then forming these constellations in a zodiac as sort of a helpful way to keep in mind exactly where we're at. And that eventually the zodiac became personified constellations and their movements, and they became telling stories about these different constellation movements. It goes over so many different gods and cultures and religions, but essentially they drive in that Horus is the sun, that all Western religions basically came from Egypt, and that these Egyptian mythology is the source for everything else that came after it. That's a pretty broad stroke of the brush, but that's kind of what they declare in this.
And what you said is kind of how you could summarize it and simplify it, because there is so much information throughout history of different gods, and they even stop where you could tell at one point they were like, oh, that's a little much. But for me, I don't know about you, but this, like, I mean, I'm not a huge religious guy. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and this was like a oh moment, like where I'm like, dang, like this just solidifies everything I've been thinking about the negativity of religion.
So there was a movie that came out right before Zeitgeist. And let me just say that the Zeitgeist, again, it's kind of like a Whitman sampler, but it doesn't seem that they put out any brand new information. It's just a really good mixtape, a great compilation of other information. And there was a movie that came out a year or two before this one, and it was called The God Who Isn't There. And it was about this kid that had grown up super religious his entire life and also came across a lot of this exact same research about Jesus being this archetype that goes back. Anyways, if you're interested in that particular topic, I highly recommend that documentary too, The God Who Wasn't There. The second part of Zeitgeist is called All the World's a Stage. And just to summarize it briefly, 9/11 was an inside job. That's pretty much what the second... Well, we'll get into the details on that. And then the final, or at least the third act, is says, don't mind the men behind the curtain. And this is basically saying that bankers are behind everything. It talks about central banks, the IRS, the Federal Reserve. It's essentially a summary of Money Masters, but maybe a 20 to 30 minute summary of Money Masters.
Yeah, it kind of consolidates it instead of the 3 hours that you would have to sit through. And, you know, doesn't go as thorough. So sometimes it's a little shaky on some of the evidence they provide because there is more details, but they didn't have enough time.
All right. So strap in, because we're going to start whipping through a whole bunch of the claims they make. And I'm breaking these up into sections. So first, that Jesus never existed. That's basically the claim, is that there was no historical Jesus. In the process of researching some of these little tidbits, there's a name for this called historicity, or historicity, which means like how accurate your version of history is. Anyways, that there's your word for the day. So again, the claim is that Jesus never existed, that Egypt is the source of all Western religions, that modern Christianity was the result mainly of a political movement based on Roman religions, and that this religious myth, the most power that, you know, political devices have ever created to submit to authority and give this blind faith in God. They make a very strong case that once in mass, people just gave up and said, let Jesus take the wheel and the church will let us know how good of a job we're doing, that it was all sort of downhill from there.
To sum it up for me, and I've said it many times, but it's like the Book of Eli. It's basically the Book of Eli boiled down of where, hey, some guy's rewriting history to control the masses through religion.
So let's go through some of the specific claims. Here we go. That Horus was born on December 25th, born of a virgin, Isis, marked by a star in the east, adored by three kings. He was a teacher by 12, baptized at 30. 12 disciples, performed miracles, was called the Lamb of God. He was crucified. He died for 3 days. He was resurrected. And then they show this comparison between not just Horus and Jesus, but by a whole bunch of other gods, Attis, Krishna, Dionysus, Mithra. They actually have a list of like 20 other names. It just whips by. And they kind of intentionally make them go by fast, just so you're like, man, there's so many more that fit all this. And I just need to point out that, again, this is not new information for Zeitgeist. They even quote this guy, Gerald Massey, at the very beginning of the movie, as it's starting up in this long 20-minute intro. He was an a self-taught Egyptologist and a poet, and he wrote this book called The Natural Genesis in 1883 that basically says that Christ came from Horus. And then there was another book that was in 1875, even before that one, by a guy named Kersey Graves called The World's 16 Crucified Saviors, and that's where Zeitgeist gets its other list of all these different gods. So we're talking about research from 1875, like almost 150 years old, that Zeitgeist just kind of makes new again.
Yeah, that nobody knew about, and it's now relevant to the public, where no one's digging through a lot of this research, and that's part of this documentary, is it's just a patch job of a lot of other people's works, but we could get into that a little bit more.
Yeah, and it's good. So here are some of the key discrepancies or the similarities that they bring up between all these different gods. That they all have disciples of 12. They all have this 3-day death. They all have a rebirth. And this movie does a whole bunch of asking a question and then immediately answering their own question. So their question is, why all these similarities? And the answer is because it's all astrological. That the star in the east is Sirius. That Christmas is used as this date because Christmas is the day that the three stars in Orion's belt, also known as the three kings, they all point directly at the sun's birth at winter solstice. So this is the Eastern Star and the Three Wise Kings, all astrological, that the Virgin and the Virgin Birth is actually the constellation Virgo, who is also called the House of Bread. And one of the representations is this virgin holding a shaft of wheat, and that the word Bethlehem literally translates to House of Bread, which refers to a place in the sky, not on the earth, quote from the movie. So they go really, really hard in the fact that this whole entire Christ myth is all about astrology. And it also mentions December 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. This is when the sun is at its lowest point on the Southern Cross, which is essentially the sun. You would wake up and every day for 3 days, the sun's just sitting in the same spot that it was the day before, which is somewhat of an anomaly compared to all the other days of the year. And this is what the, you know, the sun dying for 3 days on the cross. And then on the 25th, this, when you come out again, it raises up one full degree. So this is the sun resurrecting itself on that third day. And one of the other points they make is that we don't really celebrate spring equinox until the sun fully overtakes the moon, which means that the days are officially now longer than night. And this is fully, you know, Christ conquering death, or life conquering death, light conquering the darkness.
Yeah, and they really compare and drive home the sun god theory of Jesus being the sun god, quote unquote, without saying maybe necessarily that.
The 12 disciples are the 12 constellations. They point out 12 tribes, sons, judges, patriarchs, prophets, kings, princes. These are all from the Bible, all these numbers of 12. That the cross with the sun behind it, if you just look at the top of a, like a church steeple, and it's got that cross, it's got the little circle in the background, which is like the sun, that really, if you zoom out, that's just a shorthand reference to the zodiac. That if you were to draw the zodiac, you draw on this cross, and then you draw a little circle around it and put all the little you know, symbols in between these different axes on the cross. But really, the cross with the circle, that means zodiac. It doesn't mean Jesus or anyone on the right. And they even mention how the crown of thorns are the sun rays from the corona of the sun, the light of the world. It goes on and on and on about making this point that it is the literal sun god. And then it actually gets into a pretty decent explanation of the procession of the equinox and ages. So the highlights are that ages are 2,150 years long. Each age represents that the sun basically rises in a different constellation throughout that entire age. That this entire cycle to go through every single age takes about 26,000 years. That's for the sun to go through all the 12 zodiac signs. That we're currently in Pisces until about 2150. So unfortunately, we're stuck in Pisces. Like we're probably not going to live to see the full age of Aquarius. The age of Aquarius starts in 2150 and it goes to like 4300. I don't know if something special happens on that exact day or it's more of like a gradual transition. And that this whole idea of new age and new ageism, and you might think about hippies like running around in the forest, you know, smelling like patchouli and like smoking weed, but really new age means that we're on the cusp of the sun rising in this completely new sign, and that this makes a difference on how everyone thinks. I'll keep going, but yeah, what do you think about the new age and the constellation breakdown?
I thought they did a good job of presenting it, and it makes sense. Whether you agree or disagree with a lot of the statements that are made or things that are presented, it does make sense, and you can put it into a context of like, yeah, that this is a new age.
It's a lot of the math checks out, a lot of the symbols check out. For example, he mentions how Moses, there's a story, he comes down and he tells everyone to kill their brothers and their neighbors and kill your companions because they were worshiping this golden bull. And what really he's talking about is the neighbors on the zodiac, that you need to stop worshiping this old god, kill your old bull, because that was the age of Taurus, which was from 4300 BC and it ended in 2150 BC. So if anyone was still worshiping golden calves after 2150 BC, then they were worshiping the old times. They needed to like get with it. They need to update their firmware a little bit. Yeah. And that Moses represented the ram and the ram's horn. And that's why that's such a strong symbol. There's even some depictions of him having like the two horns, but this is because Moses represented Aries, which was the age that came after Taurus. You also have got Mithra, who was the bull. He's shown slaying the bull, because again, this was the next age that was moving out with the old and in with the new. And that Jesus represents Pisces. He feeds with fish. He teaches people how to fish, the feeding of the plenty, like all of these different aspects. And him being a fisherman is really about this astrological sign. So, and they make this a quote that I love in conspiracy documentaries and podcasts. We do it ourselves sometimes. It's like, most people don't know that Jesus is really a pagan symbol. And like, I love the calls to like most, it's such a weasel word.
You might not know this. I'm going to tell you for the first time.
Right. And then essentially they summarize this all. How has everyone fallen for this crazy, you know, grift? If it's all talking about astrological sun god, why is everyone fighting wars over essentially with the same thing? And he mentions that the King James in particular was a translation, and they mistranslate some very key concepts. One of those being the end of the world, and really the original writing doesn't translate as end of the world. It translates to end of the aeon or end of the age, meaning that it's just this cycle that keeps going forever. That one little mistranslation, as this movie claims, though, that gives rise to the whole entire premise of end of days and revelation, and we're living in end times. That just one word from world to aeon, or from all of time to all of age, completely changes the definition, and that governments thrive on this to like, oh, people actually feel that there's this impending doom. We can capitalize on this.
And you're right that this is not a new thing. It's another information piece that has been a little bit recycled, where a lot of people also said end of an era, like end of the Roman era, like, right, like maybe it was specific to that time and not this end of the world, end of ages. But it did get people delving into this, like, well, we're about to all die, ready for the rapture.
Right. Who in the world is writing a book and they're like, yeah, people are going to be reading this in 2000 and years, and it's totally going to hold up, right? And the movie does a pretty good job, because it transitions and it finds a decent segue from talking about this Christ myth, as it calls it, transitioning into this all the world's the stage. And the way they do it is they set up this premise and they say that all of this Christ myth was solidified in this Council of Nicaea. Shout out to Dan Brown and, you know, Da Vinci Code and everything. They do a pretty good illustration of this. But the Council of Nicaea, they come together, and the Vatican solidifies this, like, political, religious power in enforcing, here's the way it is. And one of the downsides that Zeitgeist claims is that this enforces this mythological thinking, this Jesus take the wheel thinking. And this also means that now politics and religion can share some of the same attributes. And they don't outright explain this, but such a great freaking clip and very topical, but it shows Tucker Carlson, and Tucker Carlson is basically yelling at somebody or yelling at the TV screen on his news program, saying anyone that questions 9/11 is blasphemous. So they're basically equating questioning your government to questioning your faith or questioning your God, as if these two things are comparable. And then he goes into that in the next section.
But they did a really good job of being in the times, because if you remember during 9/11, there was this huge push or God bless America and, you know, stick together and God we trust, like this new form and bond of religion and government being hand in hand was developed, well, not developed, but created pretty much after 9/11.
And yeah, just exploited easily.
Easily.
So the second section of this movie, in these three different sections, All the World's a Stage, it starts out with lots and lots of quotes about 9/11 being a controlled demolition by news anchors, a whole bunch of footage that was recorded that morning as it was all unfolding from, you know, BBC and ABC and all the different news programs. Then it shows a whole bunch of the anchors. It shows witnesses all talking specifically about secondary explosions and planted devices that were inside the building and hearing explosions and different orders that were distinct from the planes hitting the tower. So it's here's just a whole bunch of different quotes, and you'll see this movie does that a lot. They just play other people talking in order to kind of create their narrative. And then it shows a whole bunch of clips of politicians saying a very similar phrase of like, we had no prior knowledge. No one saw this coming. No one could have guessed this was going to happen. And then they immediately cite Able Danger, which is an official government program by the DOD that's specific, or I think it was a FEMA thing, that specifically considered this exact scenario of a plane flying into the Twin Towers and what the emergency response would be.
And this goes back to, I think, part of the film of where they're taking from like other films and they've kind of mashed it together. That's why, like, I feel like it's just a giant pot together with a bunch of different conspiracies, which is good. It's a great thing to get things started. And the information 9/11 was lifted a lot from a couple other films like Loose Change and things like that.
Yeah, it's this movie's a great mixtape.
Yes, that's the best analogy.
And then it talks about how Bush met the Bin Ladens after having a meeting with the Carlyle Group. Doesn't get into a whole lot of detail. It just starts listing a whole bunch of these different little breadcrumbs for you to follow. It mentions a little bit of the jet fuel not being able to melt steel. So here's some of the origin of the jet fuel can't, you know, melt steel beams meme. It shows an actual interview with Les Robertson, who was the World Trade Center structural engineer, saying to the camera that the building was specifically designed to be hit by a Boeing 707. Les Robertson, a lot of people will, I hear this in other interviews and reviews, they're like, Leslie, she did this. It's a dude. His name was Leslie. Deal with it. I had an uncle named Leslie. He was a guy. It's a guy's name. Then they go into free fall claims. Then they show firefighters immediately, like that week after, talking about seeing molten steel and these rivers of lava and all this other, even under Building 7, they're repeating all this stuff. They talk about the NORAD stand down. They talk about all these different military exercises that were going on at the exact same time that 9/11 was happening. One of those called Vigilant Warrior, which essentially saw all the fighter jets scattered as far away as they possibly could from being able to reach this in time. We'll get into this in more detail in a future documentary. Then the movie Zeitgeist starts to slowly transition into not just 9/11, but just war on terrorism, and how having this war against an abstract concept is sort of the perfect war because it can't ever end. You can't really have metrics on how well you're doing. And then it talks about the 7/7 London bombings and draws a lot of parallels about how they also had, you know, no one could have seen this coming. We had no prior knowledge, yet there were all these government programs showing that they had practiced this exact scenario and that they had exercises running that morning dealing with those same exact trains and the same exact scenarios that pulls it off, and people on the radio scrambling like, is this part of the simulation or is this real life? Which is so eerie to hear them saying the same thing in 7/7 and 9/11.
And I think this part of the film really is designed and set up to like kind of be a tug on your emotions, right? Like it's kind of showing you a bunch of information, but really quick. It's going through it and telling you, hey, the government did this, but it's trying to tie it all in together. And a lot of the shots are emotional, right? Because it brings back people to the trauma of that time. And I think that was the intent of this part of the film, to kind of rock you into the next section.
Paired with some hip hop and some drum and bass and like a decent soundtrack compared to any other documentary that you might see coming out up until now. They were starting to understand the same way that like a DJ works the crowd. Whoever was putting these movies together understands how to like work the audience.
Yeah, it was no longer just press record and start talking and have poor miking and zero transition. It really set a new standard for what we're expecting out of conspiracy documentaries.
The final section, part three, it's called Don't Mind the Men Behind the Curtain. And I'll be a little bit brief on this one because really it's just summarizing at a very surface level everything that we went over in Money Masters. It was like someone watched Money Masters and said, how do I give all the high points in like a 15, 20 minutes? That's what you get in Zeitgeist. So the main things they bring up is, again, this rhetoric where they ask a question and answer it. So they pose this question, what is a central bank? And they kind of self-define it by something that controls interest rates and money supply. And they really hammer in this concept that money that comes from a central bank is loaned to the government and lets them use it. It's not like the government owns their own money. They're renting it from some other company that says, we'll take care of the interest rates and the supply. You just let us know when you need some, and we'll print it up for you, and we'll kind of handle all the numbers for you. So that money gets loaned to the government with interest, and that because of this dynamic, the only thing that it can produce on an infinite timeline is just debt, so that the outcome is slavery. And I understand how charged that statement is, like, oh man, all money is debt and debt makes us slaves. But they make a very, very compelling point, and they're like, no matter what job you've got, whether you work for the man, whether you work for yourself and do self-employment tax, whatever you do, you're basically working at minimum 3 months of the year just to pay taxes, just to be allowed to exist legally. You're spending 3 months of your entire year just going to that. And that does kind of make it feel like every year we have to get locked up for 3 months and just work on the chain gang until we're done. And then we can go back to living life, which is kind of crazy. But that's sort of a real scenario.
It is a real scenario, and it kind of gets us into the whole, not myths, but like a lot of the things and the lure behind the Rockefellers, Morgans, and the Rothschilds and Jekyll Island, which like was introduced through different types of media and what we did last episode on the
Money Masters
episode, where it really reveals the banking industry.
And this one also goes into some more specifics. Yeah, they drop all the heavy hitter names, Rockers, Morgans, Rothschilds, even like the Warburgs. A lot of people usually, you know, everyone always misses this name. But really, the Warburgs, this is Little Orphan Annie and Daddy Warbucks. Daddy Warbucks was Paul Warburg, and that was another influential name in the Jekyll Island Hunt Club and passing the Federal Reserve. And the movie goes on to talk about how the 16th Amendment was never ratified. This is a rabbit hole on its own right. It almost dovetails into sovereign citizen area. I'm sure this will come up again in a future episode. And then they kind of wrap it up by saying war is this one thing that forces a country to borrow money. If you go to war, you absolutely have to rely on these central bankers in order to raise all the resources you need to like buy all the stuff to go to war. So war is the most profitable for bankers. The banker has to loan money so you can go to war. They're making money regardless of the outcome of the war. They're making money. So therefore, war is the ultimate profit for bankers. So when you hear like, oh, these war pigs or these bankers are making us go to war, I mean, there is a very real connection between these two. You're not just firing from the hip and throwing out evil bankers. That bankers do indeed make money from war. And then they end on a pretty salacious claim. They mention how World War One, World War Two, Vietnam, 9/11, and probably others, but they were all based on false flags, that none of those wars would have happened unless it was this unseen hand working behind the scenes trying to convince the United States to get into these conflicts specifically through false flag events.
And they do make a compelling argument, and especially if you have a conspiratorial mind, you will see that they do line up well in the way that we think, at least.
So, and they do bother to bring it to a full conclusion, and they explain the namesake of this movie, Zeitgeist. So at the very end of the movie, as he's kind of summarizing everything, he says that a zeitgeist is this method that the mass media and the state and the bankers and everybody else, they harness this to keep everyone in a perpetual state of fear and entertainment. And that's what the zeitgeist is. And then he cites Aaron Russo, which we're going to watch his movie too in this series, but Aaron Russo talking about how he gets invited to meet one of the Rockefellers, and that the Rockefeller guy gave him advanced knowledge of 9/11, and basically admits to all the claims in this movie. Aaron Russo serves as a, and Rockefeller told me all this himself. So we'll get into that in a future one. Another thing that firmly dates this movie to about 2007 when it came out is it talks about RFID chips on the way out. Which is a little bit dated because RFID never really picked up that much. In fact, we've got way better ways of tracking people now, like just your cell phone, for example. Like, we don't need to chip everybody. But it you can tell, like, on the way out of the room, Zeitgeist is just, like, popping shots off at everybody. They're like, bam, an RFID, and bam, Aaron Russo.
Hey, don't forget about this. Hey, watch out for this. It really like starts to make a claim where you're going to be controlled in another method. Like that's why I think they went from the beginning of history to like what's going to be the future. And at the time, that's what they thought the future was going to be.
A little bit of hidden treasure, a little bit of overboard stuff. I'll go through mine and then you'll go through yours. So for me, the hidden treasure here is, like I said in the opening, that this is a Whitman sampler of conspiracy theory. You might not go up to your friends and be like, hey, check out this 3-hour documentary and this one and this one. Here you go. Do you have 9 hours free to watch a whole bunch of stuff? Here, go and watch these 9 hours. You're probably not going to get a lot of people. They're going to clear their schedule and watch 9 hours of stuff. But you might be able to get someone to watch Zeitgeist for slightly under 2 hours. And now they've got enough breadcrumbs that, oh my God, I never heard that about Mithra, or I never heard that about Jekyll Island, or they're going to come away with something. Even me rewatching this, like, damn, I forgot about that. Oh yeah, what a great, you know, point. Like, I've seen this movie plenty of times, but it's so jam-packed with stuff, it's impossible to not catch something. And I guess part of the benefit that it uses so many other people's quotes and claims and makes it a little bit timeless. It's not just this one dude's opinion. It's like 50 different people's opinions packaged up and kind of portrayed in a way that there's a cohesive story to it, which is not easy to do. So to me, that's really the highlight. Great edits, good music. They add some custom animations of like Horus fighting Set, and there's one where God drops the one of the tablets with the Ten Commandments and it falls on this like little abstract art dude. They also have a really great visual of the sun traveling through all these different ages and showing how they align with the zodiac. So I'm a very visual person, and them showing exactly what they're talking about and what they mean when they say the sun dies and it rises, or how it goes to these different ages, actually seeing that in 3D with this huge zodiac, I think was probably the highlight of this movie for me.
And for me, I agree with the visuals, because I complained a little bit about Money Masters, you know, not having the greatest transitions in music. It's almost like pre-social media putting it all together. It's like a bunch of TikToks, but instead of 30-second, 90-second reels, you got 2 hours worth of material all put in one shot. That really chops it up. That gives you a pop culture reference of what people were thinking of the time, as well as history and quotes from everybody. I think that the movie has amazing new way of thinking of how to put a documentary together. It's not like the old ways of just talking and showing brief little cheesy PBS style steals or anything. It really takes it into another level of your own design, your own creativity, and puts a new touch of art onto information.
It's so wild too, juxtaposing this movie with Money Masters. They're separated by 10 years only, right? But the difference between Bill Still's Money Masters in like 95, 96 to Zeitgeist, like Bill Still's a pro. Like, he knows how to do pro stuff, but he's doing pro stuff the boomer ancient way with like analog swipes, and he's wearing stonewashed jeans, and he's got his cross colors and his polo like tucked in with like the woven leather belt. Like, it's got a very specific aesthetic of someone that kind of grew up in the old world industry of media. Whereas Zeitgeist, you can tell it was made by some 20-year-old college student that got his hands on like Sony Vegas Studio or some kind of like entry-level video stuff, but is able to make it work. So yeah, and I would say that the overboard aspect of this movie, like the downsides, are almost inseparable from the pro sides, right? So if the pro is that I can give you this one movie and get your take on at least three different massive conspiracy theories, there's also a chance that if you're sort of highly religious, if you're a Bible thumper, you might not even make it past the first third of this movie and hear about the Federal Reserve and hear about 9/11, because you're like, not my Jeebus. You know what I mean? That's not what my Bible says about that. And I can see people maybe putting up a wall, so everything that comes after that, they kind of don't absorb it the same way. So you got to like give and take with the pros and cons of this, of putting everything all into one movie.
And I'll take that a step further. I think that it lacks nuance in other areas where it's real biased and doesn't like explore other alternative options. It's either good or evil. That's it. And it kind of gets you into this thing like we can't fix anything, but everything's good and evil and evil's winning right now. So that's it. Like, you know, it kind of leaves you on the cliff right there. Great information, but kind of can feel a little hopeless.
And we'll have to talk about the sequels, because there was a Zeitgeist 2 and 3 where they kind of spell out an answer, but it gets really weird. We'll say that for later. And I also want to tack in here, too, that one of the downsides of this movie is that it doesn't necessarily make its own claims. Or if it does, it's like one or two times throughout the entire movie. Most of the time, it is heavily relying on Bill Hicks and Network and George Carlin and Jordan Maxwell to tell you what they're thinking. And then you just sort of imply that that's what the movie's telling you. But the person making the movie, I almost feel like their individual voice gets lost a little bit, or maybe never existed, for better and for worse.
Agreed.
All right, let's see what actually holds up. This is the deep dive. This is testing the waters. I'm thinking it's really the Jesus and the Zodiac stuff. It's crazy because I was watching other people's reviews of this movie, or at least their thoughts of it, and a lot of them cite the Jesus and the Zodiac as being the weak part of this movie versus the strong part. For me, it was almost the strongest one, because I've seen more in-depth documentaries on all three of the topics this one goes into, but the Jesus and the Zodiac, it seems that they actually made their own graphics and they really took time to spell everything out bit by bit, way more so than 9/11 or banker stuff. Like, they really showed and illustrated all of these different like Zodiac stories. So I guess the part that doesn't hold up are all the 9/11 clips. A lot of them seem scrubbed from the internet now. You can't really find a lot of those. And then it also makes a lot of claims that it doesn't have the time to back up, right? Money Masters only was talking about a third of what this movie talks about, but it was 3.5 hours. So they can only cover so much ground. So it has to say surface level just because of how much that they move around. So that's kind of the biggest gap for me, is lots of claims, very little backup, very little sources to go and find all this stuff out on your own.
And for me, what holds up is the social control aspect, where they can kind of show you throughout time. Now we look at think tanks, but now you can kind of think tanks and religion kind of go hand in hand. That's something that holds up forever. I think that the propaganda and the psychological warfare, it kind of the beginning of a lot of that talk that's been put out there into the ether. And for what doesn't hold up for me is what I said earlier, a lot of it is the lack of solutions and the simplification of the good versus evil, instead of kind of like, yeah, you know, you have these groups and these groups. And again, it might be because they didn't have the time to really analyze all of it, right? And go into detail and back it up of like, well, this group kind of did this and this group, they just kind of roll through information. They're just throwing things at you. That's why it kind of reminds me of going through a social media page but it's all in one video. You know what I mean? And it's jam packed, gives you so much information. And I think that they kind of polarize people to where, like, you either believe this or you're against me.
I can almost hear the director screaming in the background. He's like, I would have done that, but it was finals next week. You know, like, this was a side project. Yeah. The ripples and waves of this movie. So in other words, how this thing kind of made an impact on the rest of the world. This is kind of weird, right? Because it was a mixtape. It was a whole bunch of different movies repackaged as this new thing. Yet Zeitgeist seems like almost everybody that was into conspiracy theories, even people that weren't necessarily into conspiracy theories around this time, 2007 to 2010, have heard of or have seen Zeitgeist. So it, like, Zeitgeist itself became part of the Zeitgeist, which is phenomenal. Like, I don't know, like, maybe they're in on it. Maybe the director is also one of these bankers for his message to even give this far and wide. But the Zeitgeist became a lot of people's entry point into so many different topics, a lot of references to people. For example, I don't know if Zeitgeist is what led me to these people, but the fact that it has Bill Hicks in it, and it's got clips from the Network movie and Jordan Maxwell clips, and it talks about astrotheology. It's a really great entry point into all these different topics. So I don't know if there's any specific movies that wouldn't have existed without Zeitgeist coming first, but I know that Zeitgeist is probably one of the documentaries that we're covering that a lot of people have seen.
Well, I think the reason they saw it was because it was a time of around Netflix and streaming and bootlegs, and everybody was hooked on to the first, oh, I got this clip, I'm on Pirate Bay. I think this even predates Pirate Bay, actually. Like, you know what I mean? It's the first time where you're getting stuff off LimeWire and these illegal sites of like, I don't know what this documentary is, but I'm going to check it out. So many eyes saw this because it was the beginning of stepping away from the traditional media.
Where did this movie fall on the meter? Did this thing sink or swim? What's your final verdict?
My final verdict is a deep dive. I give it a deep dive because I think it explores like conspiracies of it's a jambalaya, like what you said. Like, I was calling it a conspiracy gumbo, but I like the conspiracy mixtape a little bit better. It has, you know, from Jesus to Horus and 9/11 to bankers, and it has great production quality. But I think it, for me, a little bit to not go 20,000 leagues is because it takes a little bit too much recycled material. It almost puts it as it's their own. I know that it's great for all the people that we learn about and sources, but you know, they don't really have their identity or their stamp of what he really believes in this.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not surprised we're both aligned on this one. I wouldn't quite, out of our rating system of shallow, deep dive, or 20,000 leagues, this is firmly in the middle of those. And I mean, maybe it shouldn't surprise anyone, because if this were shallow, then we wouldn't be bringing up a documentary that both of us saw in 2007 and talking about it fondly and like how it made an impact. Like, it clearly made an impact, so it's worthy of that deep dive. It's definitely no Money Masters, though. It does not go into so much depth that you could almost research every single different claim. You kind of have to piece a lot of it together yourself. But again, like, I didn't want to watch a 9-hour documentary, so Zeitgeist is the perfect length for the amount of ground that it tries to cover. All right, so that was Zeitgeist from 2007, a classic conspiracy theory documentary, especially if you were somewhat young in 2007, or at least going out and downloading random stuff and watching it. If you haven't seen it already, I do think it's worth watching again. It's entertaining. It goes by pretty quick, despite the first 20 minutes of the freaking movie all just being quotes and drum and bass. It still has a certain feel that it dates it to 2007 in a good way. So I highly recommend it. What we're going to be doing next is another movie that this movie was kind of based on. We're going to be watching Loose Change. And Loose Change, in my mind, is sort of like the Money Masters of 9/11. They go into all the different nitty-gritty, the names, the dates, the sources. Where Zeitgeist is lacking some of that, Loose Change fills in all those gaps. So that's the next one. Did you see Loose Change when it first came out?
Yes, I did. That's another gas station bootleg.
Do you know they actually played Loose Change on planes? I think they aired it on Virgin Airlines at some point.
I did not know that.
Imagine watching Loose Change in the air.
Yeah, you feel pretty safe.